Hi everyone. So as you're coming in, we're going to do a quick poll. So I'm going to send out a poll asking you guys what your AI experience is and where everyone's from. So I'm going to release it now.
Hey, what's up, y'all?
Hey, Evan.
How's it going?
Good. So, we have all the participants logged on right now. So I'm just gonna go with it. And people are starting to come in now. It like shows up on the sidebar, so.
Are these students mainly?
Yeah, so we have 20 people watching right now, and we're just waiting for more to come in.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, so far, we have 20% using AI daily, 20% using AI weekly, 60% using AI rarely. So we have 90% using AI for studying. And so far, no one's really using AI to start a business for time management. So I'm excited to get started. I'm just waiting for more people to come in. We'll start at around 11:40. Okay. So we have 13% using it for AI organization. Let's see. End this poll. Let's see where everyone's from. Let's launch that. Okay, now I'd like you guys to just type in what country, state, or city you're from so we can get a sense of where everyone's coming from. Okay, so I think it's time to start. So welcome everyone to this webinar. I'm so glad you're here. My name is Yael. I'm a high school student from New York. Many of you are here today because you want to learn AI. Some of you might want to start a company, join the workforce in the future. Or maybe you just want to know if robots are going to take over the world. So whatever it is, you really do have to be well-versed in this new technology. But the issue here is AI is so new and evolving so quickly, but no one our age knows where to start. I mean, clearly Evan does because he's been so successful with everything, but most kids don't know how to use it. So what I'm really doing here today is trying to democratize this AI education and trying to make everyone aware of what's really possible here. So I decided to change that. I started Quantum Street, as you could see. It's a platform dedicated to helping kids really understand AI, build skills, take ownership in their future. So today's summit is really a part of that mission. The World Economic Forum estimates that around 92 million jobs will be displaced by AI between 2025 and 2030. But 170 million new ones will be created. So the real difference between being displaced in this economy and being in demand as a candidate comes down to one thing, and it's having those skills. So that's really what I'm trying to help you guys with today. So in most schools, we're taught to think that using AI is cheating, that it's that it will make you dumber, that you won't learn, and that's a shortcut. And in some respects, that might be true. You shouldn't really be using AI to write an essay. I think that's something, a skill you should know how to do. Communication skills are really in demand. But the reality is, by not embracing AI, you're cutting yourself off from the future workforce and potentially missing an opportunity to fulfill your own potential as possibly an AI entrepreneur, a super successful investment banker, whatever it might be. You need to know these skills. So I'm just going to share my screen to the presentation we have for today. So first, I'd like you guys to just take a second and follow the Quantum Street Instagram. This really is a place where you can learn skills. It has some AI humor, if you will. And it's really just a place where it has a link to my website, my podcast, and all these kinds of things that will help you learn AI. Also, after this webinar is over, I will send you guys a few resources for AI to learn. I have a glossary with all the AI terms that you guys can learn. And I have a resource sheet, so all the favorite tools that I have that I use. And many other things that will help you understand this new technology better. So, for the agenda today, I'm going to start with a quick presentation on AI fundamentals, basically what it is, how to use it, and why it matters. So, that's just my part. And so, after that, we're going to have Evan Yadagari speak about his experience as an AI entrepreneur. And then, after that, we'll have a chief AI officer's perspective. Gautam Basak at Santander, who will be joining us shortly. So Evan Yadagari, he's a successful 15-year-old AI entrepreneur. He's going to talk about his journey starting a company, what he was able to do with AI, and he's here with us today. So thank you for joining us. And
Yeah,
then
thank you for having me.
after that, we'll have Eric Aruni, an executive coach and AI specialist, join us via a pre-recorded video because unfortunately she cannot make it today. So she's going to share the kind of mindset and skills you guys should have, and the kinds of skills that future employers are looking for. So there is a Q&A box in the tools bar. So should any questions arise when I'm speaking, Evan or Gautam are speaking, please feel free to put in any questions you might have. Okay, let's get into it. So welcome to the Quantum Street Summit. So first, I just wanted to sum up what is meant by AI. So AI is a computer system that's basically trained on everything that's ever been on the internet. So anytime you type into ChatGPT or Claude, explain to me XYZ, it will pull from all the resources it has access to across the internet and spit out to you in a generative way based off of what it's seen and kind of make that prediction. Something particularly powerful is AI pattern recognition. So it basically traces across patterns that had been previously displayed on the internet, and it will spit out a response based off of past behaviors. So it is extremely adaptive, and it uses past knowledge to predict out future outcomes. So types you should know, LLMs. So this is Claude, ChatGPT. Generates text, code, and answers. So if you want ChatGPT to write an essay for you, if you want it to generate an image for you, anything generative in a chatbot format, that's an LLM. Then there's image generative AI. So you can use generative AI for images inside LLMs, but it is kind of its own format. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. Then it's predictive AI, which I think kind of relates to what I was saying before about pattern recognition. So a lot of institutions will kind of build their own sandbox with predictive AI. So, analyze this data for me and project what's going to happen in the future. Tell me, based off of what you've seen, how customers will respond to this. Netflix often uses this to predict what kinds of shows you're going to like based off of what you've seen in the past. So that's predictive AI. And then agentic AI, which is one of the most revolutionary parts, in my opinion, is AI that runs tasks for you. So you can say, whenever I get this kind of email, respond this way. Or if my boss reaches out to me asking me to do a job, say, sure, I'm on it. And then you'll have that AI do that for you. So I think agentic AI is very powerful in automating workflows and doing things for you that are more menial. So yeah. And I wanted to get into real AI use cases for every day. And I chose the three most important to me. So first we have learning in school. Claude does a really great job at creating interactive study guides. So this is something that I've used a lot in my high school experience. So Claude will create, let's say, a Quizlet for you, or it'll create a quiz for you. So you'll say, be very specific with what you're asking it, and it'll create anything for you. Study Fetch is a great resource to use. It creates study guides for you, flashcards, textbook readings, all of that. It's very helpful. So the second one I have here is work and personal efficiency. And I think the ways to use this one is, like I said before, having AI agents answer email for you. Something that I found helpful is using Zapier, which is an app that kind of automates workflows for you. So you can say, once I send out this link and people press this, automatically direct them to that link so that you don't have to send that follow-up email and you can automate a workflow. Another amazing thing that you can use for work is resumes. So you can ask Claude to make you a polished resume based off of your preferences. But a disclaimer I will say with this is I think a lot of the time in the workforce, you don't want to be robotic. So while using AI is very helpful in these kinds of scenarios, people are starting to value communication so much more now. And I think having AI write emails for you word for word, people are going to detect that right away and they're not going to want to talk to you. So you want to be as personable as you can, and don't sound like a robot. I think that's the main takeaway with that. So use your judgment. And then building on in entrepreneurship, I think Evan can elaborate on this later, but Base44, Lovable, even Claude can just create websites for you with the blink of an eye. And it's really, really powerful. I mean, you really can just build whatever you want with these apps. You can generate business plans, workflows. You can automate workflows, like I said before. You can create me a day plan of what I should get done to maintain efficiency. So really, really try to leverage AI to be more productive every day, even on your own time. So, okay, the next thing I wanted to get into is prompt engineering, and this is something that I've been working on myself for a really long time. And there is kind of a formula of some sort you can use. So the first really important thing is to assign your AI a role. So if you were to say, let's say you're marketing a football team, you would say you are a professional marketer, and specializing in sports. And then you have to be specific. I want to create XYZ for this reason, for this many people at this time. Give it the date, time, place, why, when, how. So you really do need to be specific with what you're doing and why, because otherwise it's just not going to know what to do. And then it'll just kind of fill in the gaps based off of what it knows. But it's not going to do any, it can't read your mind. So you really do have to be specific with what you want. The third is set the format. So if you want it in a Word document, if you want it in a PowerPoint presentation, really do be specific. So if you are asking this marketer to create you a slide presentation, you have to say, make it a PowerPoint. If you want it to be a poster, say, I want a poster infographic. If you want it to be a document with a list of things, you have to say, I want a bulleted list of XYZ. So it's very, very important to set the format. Again, add context, why it matters, who you're doing it for, what your audience is. These are very important things. And the next thing is to iterate and refine. Do not ever accept the first draft of something that AI creates for you. Again, it's just a first draft. So, and it's okay to say, I don't like this. Please change this in this way. So, I really do think it's okay to not completely like your output and ask ChatGPT to edit for you. Quads had it for you. Okay. So here I created an example of what I thought was a good prompt because I think if you are trying to market, let's say, a fundraiser, and you just said, please create me an infographic marketing this fundraiser. Claude's going to take its creative freedom and do whatever it wants, but like, obviously, that's not what you want. So if you really, really, really want to be specific and get your desired output, I really do urge you to be specific. So I'm just going to read out what I think is a good prompt, and you guys can kind of get a sense of what that means. You're a professional marketing agent that specializes in curating sports-themed pitch decks and infographics. I am hosting a basketball fundraiser for Y Organization on Sunday, June 14th at 8 p.m. EST, and want to reach international audiences. Please design me in a PowerPoint file in a minimalistic yet informative poster incorporating blue, yellow, and red to market my event at X location. I want to attract kids 10 to 14 years old. Include the blurb on the organization, date, time, location, and a cool basketball graphic with a flame on it. Ask any clarifying questions to ensure the best output. So I think really what you can see here is you're giving it a role. You're telling it what lens to look at it through. You're telling it what it's doing. It's a sports-themed pitch deck and an infographic. You're telling it what it's for. It's for a basketball fundraiser. You're giving it the date. You're saying you want it to reach international audiences, so maybe it's going to create things that might appeal to people from other countries. You're telling it what file to put it in, a PowerPoint. You're telling it what theme you want. So really, I think you can see here the kinds of things you want to include in your prompts to really get the best output. And I just wanted to touch on here about the will AI take your job aspect of this. And I think the main takeaway is not having it, not specializing in doing menial work, not specializing in data entry. So I think really the jobs that are in demand right now is having someone that would be fluent in AI prompting, fluent in communication. You want to be a good communicator. People crave human connection. So you want to be someone that's personable. You want to be someone that can connect with people easily because if not, anything that you will be able to do is just robotic. And that's something that Claude could do. So you want to be a person. You want to lead. So I think that's my main takeaway. So I'd love to introduce Evan right now. I'm very excited to have him here. So Evan is a 15-year-old AI entrepreneur who recently just sold one of his companies and now has launched a new one. He's the founder and CEO of 10X, which he describes as Shopify for apps. He can elaborate on that later. I'm really excited to have him on today, and I really think he is a great example of what's possible with this new AI era. So I'm really excited to have him here. And yeah, I'm just going to ask him a few questions so you guys can really get a sense about what's possible. So thank you, Evan, for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what you're passionate about, and what ultimately led you to become an AI entrepreneur.
Yeah, so my name is Evan Yadigari. I'm from New York. I'm passionate about entrepreneurship, and recently I've been passionate about fitness. The reason I became an AI entrepreneur, or even just an entrepreneur, is because I want freedom. I didn't like the idea of teachers or any external forces controlling the path I go down. So entrepreneurship has unlocked that for me, and I've used AI as a catalyst to move very fast.
Great. So, how did you come up with the ideas for your businesses? How many did it take to get to the final one? Like, what does your process look like?
Yeah, so for ideation, you always just want to look for a problem that you face or you see others face. Then you want to make sure the TAM is high enough, the total addressable market, so there's enough potential for your different acquisition channels. And as for ideas, it took me so many. I built two apps that failed. One was like a minor success. Then the third locked, scaled past 10K a month. I built a gaming website that scaled to 500,000 users. That was my second one. My first failed miserably. Then I had to create a new one. I failed Roblox games, I failed drop shipping, I failed reselling. And yeah, you just have to keep putting up shots.
Right. So what's your go-to AI tool in everything that you've created so far? What's been the app or tool that's helped you the most? And what would you recommend to students and kids just starting out with AI?
Yeah, I would recommend checking out 10x. This is actually my platform. It's 10x.app. It will help you build and scale an app. On top of that, it can help you ideate, it can help you design. It can really help with whatever you need inside of entrepreneurship. We're kind of building towards the Shopify for apps and just in general, like the all-in-one entrepreneurship platform. But yeah, right now we're starting off as like apps, and of course, eventually we'll expand to more domains.
What specifically got you to 10x? Like, was there a problem you were looking to solve, or did it kind of just occur to you that it's something that you wanted to do?
So I was actually promoting this AI app builder called Roar. I don't know if anyone here knows it, but it's a pretty big AI app builder. They're doing, I think, almost like 10 million ARR. And then this founder, Blake Anderson, he was the co-founder of Kaleai. He reached out to me after seeing that I was promoting Roar. He was like, "Evan, I was thinking about creating an AI app builder. This is definitely aligned with what I'm doing. I'm sure it is with what you're doing." And then I was like, "Yeah, let's do it." So I quit Roar. I joined 10x as CEO, and yeah, since then it's been going really well.
That's awesome. So, what do you think sets you apart from other founders? What have you learned most from your success and failures, and why do you think you were successful?
Zach, my older brother, he was the co-founder and CEO of Kaleai. He actually taught me this one. It's most people's default mode are playing games, video games, doing some nonsense, and then they set aside time to work. My
Right.
default mode in general is working, and then I set aside time to play games, hang out with friends, do whatever. And I think
What does
that's what
working
sets you aside.
hard look like to you?
Whatever's necessary for your business. I mean, obviously it's going to change day by day, but in my case, it's usually putting out content, doing outreach, making sure the team is staying on task, pushing new features, et
Right.
cetera.
So, what's been the hardest thing about moving from idea to execution?
Say the hardest part about moving from idea to execution is development, actually being able to develop your product. And you don't need to worry about that anymore because 10x has solved that for you. So if you want to build an app, check out 10x. If you want to build some other kind of software product, once again, like AI has solved that for you. So it's pretty trivial now.
Amazing. So, I mean, clearly you're a younger entrepreneur compared to the general landscape of other entrepreneurs. So, has your age been an obstacle as an entrepreneur? Like, has it been an asset? Has it helped you? And if it was a challenge, how did you overcome them?
Yeah, I think that's a huge misconception that if you're younger, you're going to be treated poorly, and it's going to be a disadvantage. It's probably one of the biggest advantages you can have in entrepreneurship. Being young is completely leverage, and there's no better time to start. Like you're going to, if you're 15 years old, everyone wants to help you. All the top entrepreneurs, they want to help you. If you post online, you're way more likely to go viral. It's way more impressive, whatever you're doing. So, I would definitely recommend getting started early. It's a huge advantage.
Right. So, what are some of the less glamorous parts of starting a company that most people might not see online? Because, a lot of the time the AI entrepreneurs are posting, the highlights of their experience and all the money they're getting. But what are some of the less glamorous parts that are actually the most necessary in starting a business?
I would say failure. You're going to fail many times, and in the moment, it may seem like it's a setback, but in reality, like it's going to shape you into a better entrepreneur. I failed more times than I can even count. So definitely failure is something that you're going to encounter, which isn't really talked about or mentioned online much.
What motivated you to keep going?
Just like my long-term goal is just the idea of impacting as many people as I possibly can, just the idea of changing the world, leaving something to the world. And in my head, like I always knew that like failure is going to shape me into a better entrepreneur. And I know that this is all part of the process. So it's best just to keep your head down, keep working, and yeah, don't let anything get in the way.
So you keep talking about your company 10X. And you also keep talking about how much you failed in order to get to where you are. So, what do you think hit the jackpot with 10X? What do you think you did differently that allowed it to not fail this time after so many failed?
Yeah, I mean, we launched 10x less than 2 months ago. It's already at like 50K ARR. And I think the reason that this business has been most successful so far and almost definitely will be the most successful, like the goal for 10x is to turn it into a $1 billion plus company. And I think the reason it's going so much better is because of the team we have built out. With my other projects, I've pretty much worked solo. With Locked, I had a few team members. That was a project I scaled past 10K a month. And then I realized how important it is having co-founders and team to build with you, to ideate with you, to work alongside you, to motivate you. And with 10X, I spent a lot of time thinking about the team, how to structure things. And I think the way we have everything set up is really, really great. And it's going to work out super well long term. We each have our own domain that we specialize in, and we trust each other that we will work well in our own domain, and we won't have to get involved with others with other domains. For example, Albie, he's a marketing guy. He's my co-founder marketing. A lot of things overlap between him and I because we're both working on the marketing end. But I trust in his instincts. I trust that he'll be able to push the product forward with the marketing. I trust that he'll be able to increase the sales, increase users, whatnot with his tactics. Timmy, CTO, development. I trust that he will continue pushing the product forward. And if of course, like, people set a deadline and they don't hit it, they should actually let me regroup. When working with your co-founders, you should be able to set deadlines with them, and you should trust that they should get it done by that date. And if they're not going to, then they should update you in advance. So you should always make sure that you're on top of whatever your co-founders are doing.
Awesome. So what's the best business advice you've ever received? And then turning it back to you, what is one piece of advice you have for other students who want to start a company?
Yeah, I would say best piece of advice is win or learn. Either you start a company, you win, it's a success, you take a risk, you win, great, or you fail, but in reality, it's not actually failure, it's just a lesson. So either you win or you learn. And as for piece of advice to students, I would say there has never been a better time to build, especially if you're young. You should definitely utilize that as much as you can. And yeah, definitely be bold, take risks. Don't be afraid to put yourself out there.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Evan. It's been awesome to have you on here. And I really think that you are such an inspiration to so many other young entrepreneurs. So I really appreciate you taking the time. So now we're going to move on to Gautam Basak. So he is a chief AI officer at Santander Bank, which is a large institution globally. He was formerly a partner at Keystone Strategy, where he then became the senior engagement manager. He contributed within innovative tech environments and applied his capabilities to really provide cutting-edge solutions. And just a reminder, the Q&A is open. So if anyone has any questions for either Gautam or Evan, please feel free to type it in. Oh, we actually do have a question for Evan before we get to Gautam. So what, actually, it's fine. We'll get to them after Gautam's done. So back to you, Gautam. Tell us a little bit about your background and what led you on the path. I know you didn't initially start out this way. So what ultimately led you to become a chief AI officer without that originally being your background?
Sure, yeah, Ellen. Firstly, a very good morning to you, Evan, and all the folks who've joined. Thank you for having me. Evan, your journey so far is so inspiring. I mean, kudos to you for what
Really
you've done and
appreciate
what you
that.
continue to do.
Thank you.
So, Yael, to answer your question, maybe I'll just give folks a little background about myself. So I grew up in India. I went to school there, engineering school, and then business school. Started working with the Citigroup there, and then I landed up in the US by chance and not choice. What happened was, I was interviewing for a job in India. They had an opening in New York, and I said, okay, I've never been there, and it sounds really exciting. Let me give it a shot. What's the worst that can happen? I won't like it, I'll come back to India. So I moved to the US in 2007. It's super interesting. I started working in technology and tech strategy consulting for Cognizant. I did that for 8 years. And then there was a part of me which felt that I need to do something new. I need to learn something new. And I switched to do mergers and acquisitions for EY, which was completely a new field for me. So there was a steep learning curve, but it was super exciting to learn something new, to apply, as you said, Yael, creative problem solving, build the networks, improve my communication skills. super valuable experience. And then around 6 years back, I had this very interesting opportunity to join a firm called Keystone Strategy, which is run by a Harvard Business School professor. And the tagline for the firm was, "We solve your hardest problems." So it was very, very intriguing. And I knew I was going to, step into something completely new where the domain, the topics were probably going to be very different from what I've done. And it was going to be challenging, but yet exciting. So that excited me. I felt that, okay, done M&A for 6 years. Let me see what this entails and what the opportunities and challenges might look like. And those 6+ years at Keystone were fabulous. I got to work across the globe on some very, very interesting problems as this pertains to technology, advising some of the largest technology companies, but more importantly, traditional businesses which were looking to adopt technology, digital services, machine learning. And then about 4 years back, we set up a practice called Core AI, where we, again, I was super fortunate. I got to work with some very, very smart people from Amazon who had built up Amazon's AI over the last 10, 15 years. And we started applying them to more traditional businesses. And it was a period of, in my opinion, extreme learning for me. And, I feel at least, an itch within myself every 3, 4, 5 years that I need to reinvent myself, disrupt myself to stay relevant, right? The world is changing very quickly. And as Evan said, you've got to take risks. Now, some of them will work out, others won't, but there's no failure. There's only lessons. So
Right.
that's a bit about my story, Yael. And that's how I got into AI. And then last year, Santander, which is a big bank, decided, okay, we need to take AI seriously. We need to set up a function. We need to put a strategy. We need to get going. That's how I took up the responsibility. It's been an exciting ride so far.
That's awesome. So, what's your go-to AI tool, and what do you think is the most important for young kids to master once for by the time they get into the workforce?
Sure. So I use a couple. Personally, outside of work, I like using Claude, and I'm like everything that we do from simple things like, what should we cook this week to, what are the best places to go out to. I use Claude quite extensively for our day-to-day problem solving, managing the household. At times when my daughters, I have two daughters, two kids, the 11-year-old has a complex math problem which I may have forgotten. We asked Claude, like, help us understand the problem. So it's I think these agents are becoming very, very effective to manage our, personal lives. I'm sure a lot of you use it for homework support, to manage your personal finances, to plan trips, travel. You can pretty much throw it to every imaginable problem, and it can be your help. At work, I use OpenAI, ChatGPT quite a bit because, we've got a list of approved capabilities, and it's very helpful from helping me with research, with analyzing documents, summarizing documents, creating reports, preparing for meetings. It's, the again, these are simplistic use cases for me as an individual, but then there's obviously a wide variety of tools that we are rolling out for our employees more broadly.
Amazing. So, in the last 2 to 3 years, what is the most significant shift you've seen in how larger institutions deal with this, deal with how they work and how it's been getting done inside a major bank due to AI? And which roles have you seen be completely repurposed?
I mean, it's an interesting question, Yael, and I think to be clear, for most traditional businesses, whether it's a large bank, manufacturing company, or a consumer company, this level of AI and change is very new, right? Most companies are still trying to figure it out. What does it mean? How to make it work? Driving change in a big organization which works across multiple countries, geographies, and businesses is not an easy task. I think the first shift, which I think is helpful, is that most companies are now realizing that AI is here to stay. It's not a fad. We need to get serious about it. We need to understand what its capabilities are. We need to understand what it can do for us. We also need to understand the risks and how to manage the downside, right? Because there's a lot of bad people who could be taking advantage of AI with malicious intents. There's things around hallucinations, bias, things that could go wrong in an undeterministic system, right? So the good news is that companies are starting to focus, prioritize, make investments in this space. Where changes, I feel, in terms of big change, I would say is like the way to think about this, and you kind of alluded to this, is like humans with AI are more powerful than, you know, just humans. So like folks who are embracing this change are open to learning new things in their day-to-day jobs and then how they work with their colleagues and interact with their colleagues. These are the folks who are going to probably run faster than the others. There's like a 10x improvement for people, at least, you know, what I've seen. And again, it's still very new, but I've spoken to a bunch of people. People who are embracing AI are operating at 10x compared to those who aren't, right? So you're kind of seeing that already. Now, are there going to be job shifts? Potentially, yes, right? Like some of the routine work, mundane work, where examples of what I was describing with AI, you could perhaps do it with fewer people. But what does that mean? Are people completely going to disappear? Absolutely not. What it means is that people who upskill themselves are going to become even more, credible. People who are able to use these AI skills, people who are subject matter expertise, whether you work in a bank, whether you work in a car manufacturing company, insurance company, people who know the business domain well, they're never going to go out of fashion. People who are very good at problem solving, they're never going to go out of, fashion. Because yes, you will have AI do a lot of tasks, automate a lot of tasks, but big decisions, especially in large organization, it means being able to communicate well. It means being able to influence others. It means being able to align people with certain viewpoints. Those are skills which are going to become even more important. And especially at the rate at which change is applying, you also need to be able to manage your stakeholders, your employees, your customers, your boards. You've got to be able to communicate well. What is the change happening? What does it mean for them? How are they getting affected? All of that is, these are very, I feel, interpersonal skills, which get the need for which gets amplified when such changes happen.
Amazing. That was a great answer. So when you're hiring today, what specifically, I know you kind of touched on the qualities of the kinds of people that these larger institutions want. So when you're actually hiring, what signals in an interview or a resume tell you that someone is impressively AI literate? How can people really demonstrate that this is something that they're capable of doing? So I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Sure. Yeah, I think the pretty much like the qualities I described, right? When I specifically interview, I look for people who are hungry, people who are hungry to learn, people who are okay with failures and have shown that they have the resilience to come back, people who can work in good teams. The technology could, is AI right now. It could be BI 5 years later, or it could have been something else. It doesn't matter. It's like folks who are just willing to get their hands dirty, folks who are willing to embrace new things and do things. So I like doers more than speakers. Like, show me what you got, show me, make it happen. That's the kind of those are the kind of like, characteristics or skill sets that I look for. Like, it doesn't, again, these, in my opinion, are something which will never go out of fashion. Of course, there's specific technical skills, whether somebody knows it, doesn't know it, knows some of it, but if they just have the right attitude, people can pick up things, right? People can just do amazing things. They just need to have the courage to try. They need to have the courage to get back if things don't go, right the first time. So to me, resiliency and open mindset to learn, good interpersonal skills, those are the things that I look for.
Right, thank you. So AI has changed a lot over the past few years in terms of its capabilities, how people use it, who uses it. So what changes do you think that you see? What changes do you think are coming that will just completely disrupt the workflow and the way things are going in the world?
So I think a lot of the changes over the next 5, 7, 10 years is going to be driven by you, Yael. And when I say you, I mean, the folks in this discussion. Like, your expectations are very different than what, millennials had. Like, you, most of you have grown up with a phone or a computer, right? Since, you were probably able to comprehend speak from a very, very young age. And honestly, I'm just amazed by how creative young folks are, how they see the world in a different way, whether it's interacting with each other, whether it's doing business, how you buy, how you shop, how you eat, everything is changing. And you folks are the ones who are going to be defining the needs of the future, right? And that is changing very, very fast. And what AI is doing, and as Evan said, you always work back from a problem, right? You're using AI to solve a particular problem, to either help you, to automate things, and all of that. I feel that is going to change. And I'll give you a few examples, right? Like to make it very concrete. Most of your parents probably have had a fixed job. They work at a bank, they work at a law firm, whatever, right? And they're used to regular payslips. You get paid every month or every 2 weeks. It's a very fixed pattern kind of a life. Now, if you look at how the jobs are evolving, there's so that whole how people work and earn has made a big pivot over the last 5 years, and it's only growing. Like think about the gig economy, where you've got folks who are driving for Uber or Lyft, or who are delivering for DoorDash, or even the content creators on TikTok and Instagram. Their whole modus operandi has changed completely, right? They work for, they are their own bosses. They work, four, five, eight jobs. Their pay schedules are not static. Like it depends on the contracts you have, depends on when you want to work. So all of that is changing, which means the way that I'm just giving a banking example, a bank would traditionally not be able to figure this out, but they need to change to adapt to these modern earners, right? So it's just an example, and there's so many other examples that's going to like this. But the bottom line is that there is a big shift happening in how people work, in how people live, in how people earn, and how people consume. And to me, like businesses and entrepreneurs who are looking 5 years out and are reimagining what those opportunities are the ones who are going to succeed. The ones who are able to execute, not get bogged down by a failure or two, are the ones who are going to come out as winners and champions.
Right. So on that, there's been a lot of talk about, AI replacing all jobs, being more efficient because it's cheaper and faster. But we've actually been seeing that AI companies are starting to be more expensive than companies have been anticipating. So how does that change the way that people are thinking, the way that people are scared about losing their jobs, and how does that change the job landscape?
It's a great question. I'm going to borrow an example that I heard literally 2 days back from a Harvard Business School professor. And he was in a meeting with me, and he said, like, when horse carriages started getting replaced by cars, people were like, okay, what are those carriage riders going to do, right? Like, they're all going to be out of jobs. But then the reality is that when cars came in, they were much higher in numbers. So like, there were way more cars than there were horse carriages. And B, a lot of people got, jobs as, chauffeurs and drivers, not just, for residential need, but for commercial applications as well. So people thought that there would be a job loss, but in reality, like, it actually created more jobs. And I see this no differently. Like, I would say, if you look at the big inflection points over the last 100 years, right? Like, say, electricity, computers, the internet, mobile phones, all of this led to actually, drove growth in the economy, created more jobs, created more opportunities. And AI is that inflection point. Because if you look at it, the way the world runs today and the companies run today, are they completely wired to support AI? Probably not. So there's going to be a lot of work needed between the next 5, 10 years to actually make businesses AI first. I'm sure a lot of you hear today that, like, hey, AI first companies, and how everybody wants to be an AI first company. It's perhaps easier for the startups, people who are building from scratch, because you have a clean sheet of paper, you can build it that way. But go talk to any big company, go talk to a bank, go talk to an insurance company, go talk to large car manufacturers like Ford or GM. It's not easy. It's not like the switch of a button where they can become AI first. Like, it is a lot of work that needs to get done, which means a lot of smart people need to go and solve these problems. So yes, there's a lot of like speak about, AI kind of like taking all the jobs away. I think in my opinion, we are taking a more pessimistic view of the situation. It's not. I feel that there's a lot of work to be done, and we will create new opportunities, because 5 years, 10 years out down the road, like, we don't really know what the world will look like, and there's a lot of work needed to, go there.
So on the topic of pessimism, what worries you or scares you about AI?
I think what worries me is the control and governance. We are the good and bad about AI is that it allows us to scale very fast, and it changes very quickly. Like, whatever you want to do, you can get done in nanoseconds, and you can impact a much broader scale than what you would previously could have imagined. And what that essentially means is that you need to have good guardrails in place. You need to have a control framework in mind, whether it's personal or enterprises, right? If you're building agents to, I'm making stuff up here, but like to help you manage your personal finances, right? You need to put some checks and balances, like as you would have done that. I'm making it up, but say you want to invest a part of your income in stocks and bonds or whatever, right? You would say that I don't want to spend more than 20%, like pick the stocks where you think that my loss is limited. You would mentally make those decisions before you invest. And as Yael, you were suggesting earlier, when you write your prompts to build an agent, call out the things that can go wrong and ask AI that, like, what are the different risks of me building this agent? How do I manage that risk? What kind of guardrails and thresholds should I put, right? So I'm worried about that on a personal level. I'm worried about it at an industrial level. The second thing that worries me is that bad actors and malicious people with malicious intent, they are not governed by regulations. They will take these same capabilities and will attack countries, will attack businesses, will potentially attack us as individuals. And we need to be at an elevated state of like watch. To make sure that we can prevent that from happening, because like now you're like, putting a very sophisticated engine potentially with bad actors, who can do wrong things. So how can the government help us? How can the companies help us? How can folks like for building these large language models, the Anthropics of the world, the OpenAIs of the world, the Googles of the world, they have a huge responsibility as well.
So what advice, I know we got amazing advice from Evan, which I think you agree with earlier, but what advice would you want our listeners today to walk away with, like considering your experience and your role?
I would say be bold, right? I keep telling my kids as well. I wish I were a little more bold. I'm a work in progress. So be bold. Don't be afraid. Like, you folks are absolutely brilliant. Young kids today are just so smart and just so much you can achieve. So be bold. That would be my first piece of advice. Second is resiliency is important. Like you will see, life is long. You're super, super young. You've got a lot in ahead of you. Life is not a sprint, it's a marathon. There will be times where things are going great. There will be times where things are not going great. So don't give up hope. Keep your chin high, and be ready to face another day, with a smiling face. Easier said than done, but do it.
Yeah. Well, Tom, thank you so much. I really appreciate your insights here. So I think now we're going to open it up to Q&A. We have about six questions that are all anonymous, so I can't point out the name. So Evan and Gautam, I think these are both going to apply to you guys. So first a question for Evan. How or what made you develop this mindset? Was it inspiration from friends, family, or books?
Wait, sorry. What was the question? What was the biggest inspiration?
How or what made you develop this mindset that you have about success? Was the inspiration from your friends, family, or books?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like I said, I didn't really want these external forces controlling me. There was like one turning point in the seventh grade. Like in the sixth grade, I was super focused on school. I was like strays. I still maintain my grades, of course, but like I would just only care about school. And then in the seventh grade, I was in a room with my mom and Zach, and they were like discussing colleges. And then I was curious, what's the average salary 10 years after graduating the top college? I looked up like the median salary 10 years after graduating Harvard. It was $100,000. I was like, the top students, the top of the top, are making $100,000 10 years after graduating. And that was a turning point for me where I realized this is not where I want to be. School is definitely not going to take me to where I want to go. And I started diving deeper into entrepreneurship after that.
Amazing. So Gautam, what majors have you seen be the most impactful, and what do you recommend for people just starting out? Because I really think the college landscape has changed with AI. I think a lot of previous majors, I think computer science is a great example, have kind of gotten less relevant in the AI era. So in a time where communication is so imperative to success, what college majors would you recommend people go into?
My honest answer is study what excites you, right? When you go to school, pick your major or your expertise or your specialization based on things that you feel excited studying about. And use the opportunity in college to build a good network, study hard, focus on projects where you're working in teams. Try and learn new things, discover new things if possible. And it doesn't matter what you really study. Like I have had the opportunity of working with people from many different backgrounds and people who've come from many different countries. And I see that cross-functional teams, multidisciplinary teams with people from different backgrounds, those teams are actually work out better because like you've also seen in team worked in teams where everybody, has more or less the same background. Everybody's a Comsky engineer or everybody, has studied math. I'm not saying those teams are not good, but if you combine a history major and an English major with a computer scientist and an economist, these are the teams that do wonders because everybody brings a slightly different perspective to the table. So, regardless of what you study, you try and do a good job. Use the opportunity to build strong, I would say friends more than networks. It matters. I think I'm super fortunate. Build a set of good friends that will, be there with you through and through. Learn, work hard, and also have fun in the process, right? Life is short, so you must enjoy yourself.
Thank you. So I think the rest of the questions are not specifically targeted to either Gautam or Evan. So I think either one of you can chime in if you have thoughts. So what are the different AI models that someone could use for a variety of tasks, including Claude or ChatGPT?
I can start. I think Codex by ChatGPT by OpenAI is great for writing out code, and then I usually use Claude, specifically Opus 4.8 to then review the code, help out with designs and whatnot. Grov may have some better insights here.
I mean, I primarily use Claude and ChatGPT for coding at work. My teams use a platform called Devin, which is built by a company called Cognition. Cognition is also a startup, like there are 200 people and they've gone really, really big. I've also used Nano Banana, to try out some graphics and imaging. It works out pretty well. So, I mean, these are good platforms. The reality is that every 2 weeks there's a new launch and the models keep getting better. Their applications keep getting better. So just it's, as I said, it's a period of in extreme learning. Keep up, read a lot, try out things and see what works best for you.
Do I pronounce it Gautam or Gaurav?
It's Gotham, like Gotham City. Very.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, apologies.
Nope, no worries, Evan.
Okay. So this again is anonymous. What exact skills do you need or learn? Did you need or learn to launch your companies? I think it's probably for Evan.
Need or learn. When I started out, I had no idea what I was doing. I learned skills over time, while working with different people, working on different businesses. And I would say the best way to learn is, of course, to utilize AI. Like I said, it was a catalyst for me with entrepreneurship. If I didn't know how to navigate around a platform, if I didn't know something, I'd use AI to help me. And then, of course, failure has helped a lot. And working with teams has helped a lot. Definitely have an advisor that you look up to. That's been really important for me. My older brother, Zach, is a huge inspiration for me. I've learned a ton from him. And then also my co-founder, Blake, is a huge inspiration to me as well. And he's been teaching me a ton as well. So definitely have a great advisor and use AI to help you learn a ton as well.
Great. So again, this is for either of you. Should we still learn how to code, or is it a waste of time?
You want to start us off, Gautam?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a valuable skill to have. Why? Because it teaches you structured problem solving, right? It teaches you how to think. It teaches you how to put your thoughts into paper, into code. And as I said, even if you have the best AI tools, you still want to be able to validate whether it meets your needs, look around the corners. And if you don't have that expertise, it becomes hard. Of course, AI is going to help you accelerate and, run 100 times faster, but not knowing what good looks like can be dangerous. So learning certain skills allows you to have that reason, to be able to distinguish between good and bad, what high quality means versus not. So in my opinion, yes, it's not a bad skill to learn.
I think honestly it's more important than ever to be technical. Many people think that you don't need to be now that AI can handle majority of the coding process for you. It also depends on what you're building. Of course, if you're building some, like simple homework helping app, you don't really care to do too much. AI can basically handle everything. If you're building a product as complex as 10x or something different, then of course you have to be more technical. But either way, I think it's important. It's important to be well versed on how your code works, why it works this way, how a harness works, how to set things up, how to structure things properly, especially if you're like hiring a dev or whatever. It's definitely important to be technical.
Okay, so the next question. My parents tell me to be careful about what I put in AI for security. Is that really an issue with these big companies?
It absolutely is, right? Big companies work on trust, right? Especially a bank. The whole business is trust. Like when you open a bank account or take a mortgage or interact with a bank, the number one thing that you have in mind is I'm going to put my salary, my life savings. This is a relationship where I don't want to, my data to be leaked. I don't want my money to be stolen. So these are big considerations and very, very important. So I, as a bank, we are a regulated entity, and we spend as much time as we spend on building cool stuff and coming up with innovative ways of serving our customers. We spend probably equally, or if not that, more amount of time in making sure that what we are building is secure, is safe, doesn't hurt us, doesn't hurt our employees or customers. That is just a take-in. It's like the minimum bar that we have to hold is that we cannot have our trust be broken.
Okay, so we're going to take one or two more. So this is a question for Gautam. In the age of Claude and ChatGPT, what is your view in terms of software becoming replaced by Claude code, for example, or can the two work side by side?
It's a great question. There is a disruption happening in SaaS and traditional software companies, and here is why. Like most big enterprise software, if you think of the SAPs of the world or Salesforces of the world, these are big and complex projects, and most of them are traditionally record keeping and transaction systems. And what I mean by that is, when you buy something, it notes that you bought something, and you have a history of all the records. And what AI is doing is now A is making the, some of the functionality around the record keeping systems are potentially being replaced by AI in a better, faster way. What companies want is they want to drive personalization. They want to know what product should I offer Yael or Evan? If they had to do business with us, what are they willing to buy from us? If they have any concerns, what are their top concerns so that we can proactively solve them? So where AI is becoming super valuable, where the traditional software companies have not, is drawing those insights, making those insights available to the management teams, to the marketing teams, ABC service teams, so that they can act on it, right? Like you all especially, and a lot of us use applications like Instagram, like TikTok, DoorDash, Uber. Why do we like them? A, because they're so easy to use. B, because they know what we want. They kind of proactively estimating, engaging, and coming up with recommendations which are very meaningful for us. So I think that's a gap with SaaS, which is why they're taking a hit. In my opinion, there's going to be a coexistence where the SaaS companies will continue to most likely be the systems of record, the systems where the transactions are actually occurring and housed. AI is going to take over more of the insight generation, the actions, the personalization, which adds the differentiator. So in any, situation like this, the commodity, the value starts going down. The differentiator is where, the value starts going up. That's how I see it.
So, how do you train AI?
Sure. So maybe I'll just take the example of large language models, right? Like companies like what, like Anthropic and OpenAI, this is what they've done is they've created these are general purpose models. What I mean by that is imagine it's read everything on the internet, it's read every book, it's got a lot of knowledge and insights and has a worldview, right? So and you and I can see it when we ask a question on ChatGPT, it's across a broad range of topics. It could be travel, it could be food, it could be health, it could be education. Why is it being able to answer this? Because it's a large language model. It has the models have been trained on a vast, a knowledge base or data sets. So that's how you get these large language models. But then, if I am, say, in a drug discovery company, and I'm creating drugs for the future, the large language model is good, but I, within my company, have very specific institutional knowledge. I have history of like all the past experiments that we've done. I have history of the things that have worked. I have history of things that have not. Now, what I do is, I add those additional layers of knowledge to these pre-trained models and say, okay, you've got your general, you're trained on a wide variety of things. I'm now going to give you additional information which, say, an OpenAI did not have or a Google did not have, and I'm going to feed this information so that you can learn from that and then help me with much more specific recommendations on the topics of, that are of interest. That's one. That's how you train. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'll actually chime in here because this is something that I have been working on personally. Something that I find incredibly helpful is dividing up your work into projects. So you can basically create a sandbox of, let's say you're using Claude. You create a Claude project, you put everything you know into it about a specific idea or something you're working on. And basically what it will do is when you ask it a question, it'll answer based off of everything you've discussed. A lot of the time when you just type into regular chat, Claude will not really remember so well across all the conversations. So you can't really pick up where you left off on certain things. So if you create these projects, really give it specific ex instructions about how you want it to think, what you want it to do, what kind of answers you want, the format you want the answers in. When you format it that way and you put in everything you know about it, everything you want it to know about a certain topic, it will give you answers that are just totally unparalleled to anything that will be in the normal chat. So that's something that I've found helpful. So I think the last question we're going to take is for Evan. So while creating or improving your apps, do you use manual coding or AI agents instead?
AI.
In what way?
So are you saying just to improve apps and like as I work on them?
I think it's asking about agents in particular. So, like, how are you automating your
Oh, how am
work?
I automating tasks? Mo oh, I mean, most of what we do is manual. Specifically on the development side, we always have. This would honestly be a better question for my CTO, Timmy, because he's handling most of the work on the development side. Then as for the marketing side and analytical side, we are using agents. We're testing out some different tools right now for outreach and whatnot.
Okay.
But yeah, mostly it's been manual so far.
Okay. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to speak to all the teams that are being inspired as we speak. I actually had a question that said, you guys are such an inspiration. So just know that you really are impacting people here, and I'm really proud and excited to be able to do this. So again, thank you. Just for some closing remarks, please follow my Instagram on Quantum Street Podcast. There are also free resources on my website, quantumstreet.net. So I'm really excited about this. And we're also looking for Quantum Street ambassadors. So if anyone watching is interested in becoming an ambassador, which means, running the social media, bringing it to your school, presenting it to, making your own AI presentations, all of these things. So we really are looking for those kinds of ambassadors. So if you're interested in that, feel free to email me at quantumstreetai@gmail.com. And I will share with you all a few resource guides that I created. And yeah, so that concludes the Quantum Street Summit for today. I really appreciate you all coming, and thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. See you
Yeah,
guys
of
later.
course. Okay, I'm gonna end the meeting. All right.